You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although the Muslim Brotherhood has been the largest opposition party in Egypt for many years, it wasn't involved in organizing the protests that began on January 25th. Joining me now for a look at its changing role as the protests went on and what the future may hold for the organization is Charles Sennett, a veteran Middle East correspondent for Global Post. His reporting on the Muslim Brotherhood is part of Revolution in Cairo, a Frontline special report which airs this coming Tuesday, February 22nd at 9 p.m. And I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Sennett to our show. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm okay. Is there a reason the Muslim Brotherhood wasn't involved when the April 6th youth movement organized the protests on January 25th?
I think the old guard of the Muslim Brotherhood really didn't think these protests were going to go anywhere. You know, they're very analog, as we would say, in the digital age. They thought a bunch of kids with Facebook accounts who are tweeting messages to each other were never going to go anywhere. And they were very candid and almost comical in conceding that they did not understand what this revolution was all about and its origin. But they did have a youth movement, Muslim Brotherhood youth movement, that did understand and really encouraged the old guard to be part of it from the beginning, before January 25th. And the old guard didn't listen to the youth movement of the Muslim Brotherhood, but they're listening now. And they were listening when they called for them to put the full organizational structure of the Muslim Brotherhood toward the protests when they began to get to grow in number, but also to become more violent and for the regime to confront the protesters. And I think it's an important piece of history to know that the Muslim Brotherhood, while it definitely had nothing to do with the start of this revolution, had a lot to do with the way it was sustained.
Well, a WikiLeaks document released on January 29th revealed that the United States government considered the April 6th youth movement, which organized the protests initially, to be, quote, outside the mainstream of opposition politicians and activists, and described the goals of the movement for democracy as unrealistic. Should I assume that that was also the feeling of the Brotherhood's older leaders?
That's exactly right. I mean, it really is a thrilling moment in history that these forces of youth just did so much to bring the old guard along in every way. Both in the old guard of the State Department, U.S. State Department, and the old guard of so many of the opposition movements that have been sort of bullied and bludgeoned and weakened and silenced in Egypt. And I think that would include the Muslim Brotherhood.
Now, would they have been reluctant to join in with the April 6th group because it's avowedly secular and apolitical? Are there they're also very middle class. Are there class differences between members of the April 6th youth movement and the Muslim Brotherhood?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely some cultural differences there that play a significant role. They are for sure coming at this from a very different place. I think one of the things we saw in the square, watching the Muslim Brotherhood youth dealing with the April 6th movement, the Freedom and Justice movement, the El Baradei camp, Ayman Noor's camp, all of those different opposition groups really did work together, and I think got to know each other in a unique way. But yes, before these got rolling, that there was a resistance on the part of the Muslim Brotherhood to participate in a big way with secular movements. Although it should be noted that the Muslim Brotherhood did forge a union with El Baradei, who is very secular, and helped him get the signatures he needed to be a presidential candidate. So it's a fluid situation, but yes, there's a deep cultural divide between the Muslim Brotherhood and the more secular movement.
And wasn't the battle for the bridge on January 28th a turning point for the older members of the Brotherhood? It allowed them to apply some of their expertise in street fighting to help the protesters.
You got it. I mean, that's exactly right. That is precisely what happened. If you really study the video and our team, led by Tim Grusha, who's a very strong cameraman, was right on the front lines of what was happening. And you can really see this old guard Muslim Brotherhood that's right there. They're bearded. They have prayer calluses on their foreheads. They are more experienced with the physical aspects of confronting this regime because of their history. And they, I think, played a critical role in stopping the Mubarak-backed thugs, I think we can call them, from entering the square. They also showed, according to many of the opposition members who we talked to, the Muslim Brotherhood showed a lot of restraint. What they were trying to do was keep it peaceful. So there was an attempt, there was no attempt to engage violently with the counter demonstrators that were coming from the Mubarak camp. There was just an attempt to hold the line, to not let them in. And I think in reflection, talking to the people who matter most, and that's Egyptians, that there was a sense that the Muslim Brotherhood played a valuable role in those demonstrations and not a violent one. And that they are a big, old organization with a lot of organizational skill and a lot of discipline. And I think people were impressed with the way it was quietly exerted without trying to hijack the revolution. And on the other side, the Muslim Brotherhood, I think, showed some sophistication in understanding that if they did hijack the revolution, it probably would have died. And I think they balanced it in a unique way. I mean, it was interesting to watch how they tried to balance it.
A listener, Mike in Tribeca, asks on our show page about the schism between the Muslim Brotherhood and Osama bin Laden that developed several years ago over his strategy of mass violence. So is the Muslim Brotherhood really a nonviolent organization, or is it like the IRA, where for political reasons, practical reasons, it declared itself nonviolent but still has any number of dissidents who'd be very happy to engage in acts of violence?
That's a very good question. And I think the Muslim Brotherhood has proven it's nonviolent for several decades by not participating in any violent opposition to the regime, and in fact condemning violent opposition like that of Gamma Islamia, one of the big Islamic groups out of Egypt in the mid-90s, which had a real violent confrontation with the state. And it's also absolutely condemned a lot of the theology that is grounded al-Qaeda. For example, the concept of takfir, of labeling any Muslim who supports the regime as non-Muslim apostate and therefore, you know, fair as a target for terrorism or for violence. The Muslim Brotherhood has rejected that philosophy wholeheartedly and therefore has become a target of a lot of enmity from al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda sees the Muslim Brotherhood as wimps, as not confrontational enough, as not truly Muslim, because they're not answering the call, as al-Qaeda sees it, to jihad. And the articulate and really dangerous and hateful ideologue of al-Qaeda isn't, of course, Egyptian, and that is Zawahiri, Ayman al-Zawahiri, Osama bin Laden's deputy.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard some interesting analysis about just how much this successful nonviolent demonstration puts out the flames of the ideology of al-Qaeda on the streets in poor neighborhoods in Cairo or middle-class shopping malls in Saudi Arabia. This could have a very interesting dampening effect on that. And it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But a lot of smart analysts who we've been talking to believe that there is a sense that that Osama bin Laden would be turning over in his cave with the events of Egypt because they so undercut the ideology that they espouse.
But what was their response when the Nobel Prize-winning novelist Naguib Mahfouz was stabbed by an Islamist in 1994? We spoke recently to Tariq Osman, a historian, who says that 50 years ago, Egypt was a much more cosmopolitan country. Since the Muslim Brotherhood hopes to make Egyptian society more Islamic, and the country has become more conservative over the years. Is that due to the Brotherhood's efforts, or are there other factors involved?
Well, that is that's a hard question, because I think the context to help some American listeners understand would be, you know, to what extent does the Christian right inform, for example, some of the violent reactions we've seen at abortion clinics, where someone will go forward and try to kill a doctor over the issue of abortion. So the Muslim Brotherhood, like the Christian right in America, wants a more religious society. It's their goal. They believe deeply in their faith. They believe deeply that an Islamic state would be good for the country. But it's really important to note that they've rejected violence, that they are relatively moderate, and that they have tried, despite all odds, to participate in the democratic process in Egypt, such as it exists. I mean, it was very warped and you know, it was rigged in favor of the regime. But when elections were pretty fair, like in 2005, President George Bush called for fair elections in Egypt. Mubarak understood this is you know, the paymaster, the United States, and that he needed to answer that call. So he really did set forth some elections that were still rigged, but they were more fair than ever.
And they gained 88 seats in parliament at that time,
exactly.
Almost 20% of the seats. But then they boycotted the elections last year.
Because the ensuing years after 2005, the Muslim Brotherhood saw many of its members were arrested. Its key funders who owned big businesses were arrested and put in jail, and their assets were seized. Its social service networks, you know, health clinics and schools were shut down. That's what made them very popular, and particularly in poor neighborhoods that were abandoned by the regime. So you had a sense that Mubarak tried to crush their movement, and they figured rather than suffer electoral losses in a rigged election, they were going to boycott. And that's a fair response, I think, but what's interesting now is that the Muslim Brotherhood has this checkered history. So much of their background and their philosophy is so anti-Zionist that it certainly borders on anti-Semitic. It's a fair question to ask the Muslim Brotherhood about their past ideology, this really corrosive, sclerotic ideas against Israel. And it's just, I don't know to what extent that still drifts through their movement. And I think it's important for anyone considering looking again at the Muslim Brotherhood to know that history and ask hard questions. But it's also important to listen to those who are really smart in their analysis of the Muslim Brotherhood. People like Shadi Hamid, who's an Egyptian who's at the Brookings Institution, who really believes the United States has an opportunity to engage with moderate Islamist movements in the wake of all these events occurring in the Middle East, and that one of the partners they should be considering, according to Shadi Hamid, is the Muslim Brotherhood. And I think it's a moment for the United States to be a lot more complex in its analysis of Islamist movements, to understand that they have a lot of different shadings, and that as we view them as monolithic, we end up alienating more and more of them, and we create more and more enemies at a time when the Middle East is shifting dramatically. The terrain has been altered, you know, forever, I think, by the events of Cairo. And I think that the U.S. is going to have to rethink this, and it's going to take a lot of creativity, a little bit of courage. But I think we owe it to the Egyptian people to engage certainly with their secular opposition, which we already do, but also with this more traditional religious movement as well, and to really reevaluate them.
Charles Sennett is a veteran Middle East correspondent for Global Post. His reporting on the Muslim Brotherhood is part of a Frontline special report called Revolution in Cairo, which airs on PBS on February 22nd at 9 next Tuesday. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Charles Sennett is reports on the Muslim Brotherhood in a new Frontline special report called Revolution in Cairo, which airs on PBS this coming Tuesday at 9. And the night that Mubarak resigned, you were with members of various parts of the opposition who gathered together to draft what they called the birth certificate of a free Egypt. Can you describe that scene?
Yeah, it was really an incredible moment. This is in the hours after Mubarak had announced he would be stepping down, and the square, Tahrir Square in downtown Cairo, had just exploded in joy at that news, and people were celebrating. They had made this incredible accomplishment of taking down this autocracy. And in the relative quiet of the hours after, I mean, it was still like fireworks exploding in the sky outside and huge crowds chanting slogans and people dancing in the street. But inside a green four-man tent was about a group of approximately 8 people from what's called the Revolutionary Youth Council, which combined all of these disparate opposition movements like the April 6th movement, the Freedom and Justice movement, the Al-Baradei camp, Ayman Noor's party, and the Muslim Brotherhood youth movement was in the tent as well. And this was a moment where we watched the Muslim Brotherhood came up with the idea of writing this on the back of a cardboard box because they couldn't find any paper in the tent city inside the square. So he ripped a cardboard box for water, ripped the top off it, and he had the pen, so he was the one who started to be the scribe. I thought there was an interesting metaphor in that for the Muslim Brotherhood. The other opposition began saying to him the sentences that they would draft and edit and agree upon, sentence by sentence, and it's really quite a statement. It's
well, we have a clip. Should we play a little bit of it?
Sure,
for a woman
great.
Reading
yeah, is,
from it?
Sure. This is a young woman named Sally who's a Christian, Coptic Christian woman who is reading what they agreed upon.
With all pride, we announce we are on the brink of the new Egypt we have always dreamt of. An Egypt free of fear, oppression, tyranny. An Egypt of safety, transparency, and tolerance. This is a great awakening, and the Egyptian people will no longer allow a tyrant or a corrupt to lead. We appreciate the continuous struggle and fight for freedom undertaken by politicians, intellectuals, youth, elders, women, and students. Therefore, we declare that the first urgent step is to ensure the civility of the Egyptian state. The brave Egyptian army will secure the gains of this revolution, that it will not be aborted by the remnants of the previous regime, and then they will return to its position as the protector of the Egypt, the land and the people, from every aggression or instability. History will not forget how the army stood by its people without any hesitance. And the annals of history will remember the martyrs of Egypt, those who wrote with their blood the birth certificate of a free Egypt. Long live the struggle of the free Egyptians, the youth coalition of the Egyptian Anger Revolt.
Well, that statement contains a lot of optimism and also a lot of praise for the army. Was that how most of the protesters saw the military over the 18 days of protests?
They did. They really did. I mean, even the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, which has had its fair amount of confrontations with the state, was so impressed with the army's ability to both keep the peace, but to not side with the regime and not really the side of the protesters, but to understand its role and to do it with a great amount of restraint and moderation and patience and wisdom, I guess, in waiting to see what happens. And, you know, really the aftermath of the revolution was a celebration, but it was also a time when families were standing in front of tanks with soldiers taking snapshots, and the soldiers are like putting their arms around the families and smiling. It really is a genuine expression of support for the military. A big question now going forward will be, how will the military help with this transition to democracy? Will it really do this in the six-month timetable they've laid out, which is very aggressive, or will they pull back, exert more control as the opposition founders and can't figure out a way forward? And, you know, the only organized opposition, really organized opposition, I think most analysts would say, is the Muslim Brotherhood. And that doesn't bode well, to have a sort of army regime against the Muslim Brotherhood opposition. That's so much of the past. I think it would really frustrate the great secular reformist movements that really got this revolution rolling. So many open questions around this event, but the tent scene, you know, with the kids with their flashlights and pen, you know, their pen on the cardboard, and a whole lot of idealism, maybe some naivete, I think really captured the moment of these 18 days that led to the toppling of Mubarak.
Well, the military response is the difference between what happened in Tunisia and in Egypt and what happened in Tiananmen Square and in Iran during their protests. But haven't some of the protest leaders become more wary of the military's goals now that the protests have stopped and work on a new constitution has begun? I heard reports today where some people were saying, well, we don't need Band-Aids. We need a totally new constitution.
That's right. I think that's right. And I think some of those tensions will come to the surface now and the different expectations of the different movements. But I do think the role of the military is respected. I think they will prove themselves. They, the military, will prove themselves to the Egyptian people, depending on how this goes forward from this point on.
Now, the Muslim Brotherhood is not the only Islamist group in Egypt. Does it have a relationship to other political Islamist groups in the country and in other parts of the Middle East?
Well, it has definitely relationships to other Muslim Brotherhood movements and Muslim Brotherhood-inspired movements in the Middle East. Some of those include the equivalent to the Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan. The equivalent to the Muslim Brotherhood in Gaza would be Hamas, which, of course, from the United States State Department point of view and the Israeli point of view, is anything but a proud, partner in ideology. And, you know, there are other expressions of the Muslim Brotherhood and Muslim Brotherhood-inspired movements that cut across the Arab world. And they're very different in their expressions. Each has to be looked at individually. I don't think there's any sort of global coordination to this. I think it's a franchised outfit in which these franchises have very different sensibilities, different intentions, and it would be a mistake to view them as a global monolith. Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood in and of itself does not have any relations that are deep with groups like Gama Islamia, which also rejected violence in the mid-90s, but which is far more militant in its aspirations, or the Salafists, a really pious movement that grows out of the Wahhabi theology of Saudi Arabia, sort of rejects the Muslim Brotherhood as just not pious enough. They tend to be a bit haughty, those Salafists, and more prone to violent expressions of militant Islam. And then there are other movements that would completely reject them, that are calling for violence. So I think the Muslim Brotherhood stands alone as this sort of, I think of it as like a working man's Islamic movement. It's very middle class. It's a lot of guys who are a little bit overweight, and they have calloused hands and prayer calluses on their foreheads. And they're sort of the meaty middle class of Egypt and the poor. Who really believe in this movement, and they're combined with an elite of doctors and engineers who control syndicates, or labor unions would be probably the closest thing to a syndicate. And they are a wide swath of Egyptian society, from the professional classes to the middle classes to the lower classes. And it's going to be important for American foreign policy experts to really listen to that movement, to understand it, and reevaluate it. I have no idea what is the best way for it. I don't think that's what we tried to do in the film, but we did try to get close to that movement in our film for Frontline and Global Post.
Well, they took 20% of the vote in the fairer elections. Is that pretty much a reflection of the support that they enjoy, one-fifth of the country?
I think it's a safe bet. I think there are couple of contributing factors. One, you could say, is there wasn't much opposition around, so anyone who was opposition may have voted for the Muslim Brotherhood, even though they didn't really believe in it. And the other countervailing force that would indicate they may have more strength than that is that they were a banned movement under Mubarak, and therefore had to operate in the shadows. And they have about 600,000 dues-paying members. They have a significant by a significant factor of three or four or maybe more supporters. So that would get them into the millions. And then they have people who will be looking around at the opposition parties and looking for what fits them best. And I think it's hard to say right now, but I think 20 to 25% is a safe bet.
Just one more thing. What was it like to cover this? A number of reporters were arrested. Anderson Cooper was roughed up not once but twice. And then we've heard in recent days that CBS chief foreign correspondent Lara Logan was not just beaten up, but also sexually assaulted during the celebrations on February 11th. That's after Mubarak stepped down. Do we know
really
what group was involved in that?
Well, my understanding is that the group that was involved in that were the last remnants of the Mubarak regime. I mean, they were really these sort of desperate thugs looking to hold on to their small salaries they get from the regime for being a sort of neighborhood watch groups that work with the police that have long kept control in Egyptian society. And any journalist who's covered Egypt, and I have for about 15 years on and off, you know, knows that they're the guys who were your minders. They're the guys who followed you around and thwarted you in your reporting if you let them. And they were the last desperate gasp of the regime. And I hope American, you know, listeners get that, that that was the regime-backed thugs that were going after journalists, not the protesters.
Okay. Just one other thing, because we're pretty much out of time.
Sure.
You mentioned that the Muslim Brotherhood's rhetoric at times almost veers on the anti-Semitic, and many people have expressed concerns that Egypt's peace treaty with Israel will be undercut by any new government. Is it too early to tell what will happen with its policies toward Israel?
I think it is too early to tell. It's going to depend a lot on the shape of a new government. From the Muslim Brotherhood point of view, they say they will recognize any treaty that the government that is elected recognizes, but that they also believe that treaty should be put to a vote because they don't believe the majority of Egyptian people support it. So I think they have that point of view for now, but they clearly, you know, are no great friends of Israel. I mean, they really reflect the wide demographic of the Arab street, sort of main street in the Arab capitals, that say they don't believe in that treaty, and they're not convinced that Israel is a partner in peace. And I think as much as the U.S. policy is to push for peace, if there's a changed Middle East, it's time to listen to the street, too, and learn from them what their anger is, what these demonstrations are all about, and to really have our ear very closely to the ground as reporters but also as policymakers.
What are their attitudes toward or policies regarding women? Would they like to you don't see too many
very
women in Egypt who aren't wearing headscarves anyway.
Sure. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood is a moderate Islamist party, but they're very conservative on the issues of women and their role in society. They're very conservative on the issue of the Christian minority and whether or not a Christian could be president or whether a woman could be president. And they have expressed in the past, and it's unclear where they are right now, but in the past they have said neither a Christian nor a woman should be president. They claim they're rethinking those policies. They want to express moderation, but there is a core there that is extremely conservative, and no one should go into any reexamination of the Muslim Brotherhood with naivete. Just clear eyes about what they're about and what percentage of the population of Egypt their movement reflects.
Charles Sennett is a veteran Middle East correspondent. He's been with Global Post, and his reporting on the Muslim Brotherhood is part of a Frontline special report called Revolution in Cairo, which will air on PBS this coming Tuesday, February 22nd at 9 p.m. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.